Welcome to the Bridging Connections podcast. This podcast will introduce you to the people who are on the cutting edge of Jewish innovation. You will be hearing from founders and directors of contemporary organizations creating new paths to participate in Jewish life. In this podcast, you will learn about best practices, tips for engagement, and how to create meaningful connections. This is a place that will bridge you to the tools and resources used by the Jewish leaders, visionaries, and innovators that are creating a new sustainable Judaism. I'm your host, Elizabeth Gossage, and I welcome you to come bridge the gap with me. Many people say they are spiritual, although not religious. What does that mean? What is the definition of spirituality? Does everyone have a different definition? How do spirituality and religiosity intersect? What makes Jewish spirituality Jewish? These are some of the questions I've been pondering since I scheduled this interview. They're all great questions. We could dive into these, but of course, that's not the purpose of this podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing you to the work of Institute for Jewish Spirituality, IJS. IJS seeks to revitalize Jewish life by teaching spiritual practices that cultivate mindfulness. They teach people who are seeking a more meaningful life experience Jewish spiritual practices that are grounded in mindfulness. My conversation with Executive Director Rabbi Josh Feigelson touches briefly on the definition of spirituality. Although more importantly, we discuss the offerings of IJS. I hope you are inspired to explore their teachings, guided meditations, and the retreats they offer. Hi, Rabbi Josh. I'm happy to be here with you and speak with you about Institute for Jewish Spirituality, which going forward, I'm going to say IJS because that seems easier. And I just can't wait to dive into our conversation today.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
I'm so glad to have you. And I'd love if you would start by just maybe giving a little history of IJS.
Sure. So IJS came about in the mid to late 1990s. There was basically a group of folks who, both rabbis and some scholars, who were looking at the phenomenon that had been happening for the last several decades of Jews who had really been looking to Buddhism, to Eastern traditions, yoga, meditation, etc., for spiritual practice, for spirituality. They were finding in those traditions something that they really seemed not to be finding in their Jewish upbringings, in their Jewish world. And a lot of these folks, you know, who were looking at this saying, you know, we have stuff in our own tradition, in our own backyard, kind of native technology that would seem to be in a similar spirit. And if we could just make that available and accessible to people, they might be able to find what they're looking for within the Jewish tradition. And in particular, looking at the Hasidic tradition, that when you read a lot of the early Hasidic masters from Eastern Europe in the 18th and 19th centuries, and you see what they're saying about things like consciousness and awareness and experience in our bodies of deeper awareness and spiritual reality. It seems to be very familiar if you spent any time in some of those Eastern traditions, and it certainly seems to be a more accessible, live, vivid kind of form of Jewish life for a lot of people. And so they started the Institute formally in 1999, is when we officially started. And our flagship program over the last 20 plus years has been a program to train rabbis and then later rabbis and cantors. So we now have several hundred alumni, I think it's nearly 500 alumni of that program, who go through an 18-month program anchored by four silent retreats every 6 months, and then with text study and chavruta learning and developing a meditation practice in between. And for many of those rabbis and cantors, this has been just a transformative program, and the Institute has like played a huge part in their lives and continues to. We've also gotten involved in training, working with educators in day schools, in supplementary schools, in camps, with lay leaders, training people to be Jewish mindfulness meditation sit leaders. And so that's been, you know, our work over the last 20 years.
It's interesting because as I was preparing to speak with you and going over your website, I started to think about my experiences around that time, and IJS wasn't something that I knew about at all at that time.
And this is something I do admit, probably to my mother's chagrin, and something I haven't said out loud to too many people. But at that time, I felt like I needed something else, that it wasn't, Judaism wasn't doing it for me either. And I thought back to my experiences growing up going to Jewish camp, and I was looking for that, something that really felt moving. And I think at camp, a lot of it is the community building of living together every day, but also services with music that was quite different from what I found in synagogue. And that really moved me. And so at the time when I started to question spirituality for Jewishness for me, I started to go to church with a very good friend of mine. And she went to very, what might be called charismatic type churches that had a lot of music and movement during their services. And it felt very much like camp to me. And I got to a point where I actually said to her, maybe I'm not meant to be Jewish. This is why I said maybe to my mother's chagrin.
Wow.
And I really questioned it, but I knew deep in my neshama that that wasn't the case, and that I didn't know where I was going to find what I was looking for, but it wasn't in church either. And I think what happened because of that was I walked away a little bit from Jewish life. I disconnected. It was in me, inside me, but I just didn't know where to find it in a community. So I walked away. And so I recalled that, and I was just thinking about how amazing it would have been if I had been able to find something like IJS and other organizations now that are doing this work. And of course, now I've found my way back to my spirituality and Judaism. So I think that's where I'd like to take off from there is, let's talk about what that means to have spirituality in your life, and then specifically connected to Judaism.
Sure. Well, so spirituality is, you know, it can be a tricky term to define. I think that one definition that I really like is, comes out of Professor Lisa Miller, who's at Columbia, author of a book called The Spiritual Child. And she defines spirituality as an inner sense of living relationship to a higher power, God, nature, spirit, universe, the creator, whatever your word is, for the ultimate loving, guiding life force. I think there's definitely a lot in there. I think for me, in my experience, spirituality is about a couple of things. It's about presence, about just being present in the present, being present with what is, whatever it is, and not judging it, not wanting to be someplace else, but just being able to be in the moment for what the moment is. And then awareness, and living with awareness and intention, right? Is being able to just, again, if I have my intention and I'm able to bring my intention into that moment, that to me is like presence. And, you know, there's a wonderful Hasidic teaching from one of the early Hasidic masters, Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, who talks about the verse in the Torah that we're commanded to create the Israelites are commanded to create a sanctuary, a tabernacle. Yasuli mikdash v'shachanti betocha, make for me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. Lots of synagogue buildings, right, have that verse somewhere, right, on a chiseled in stone. But Levi Yitzchak says, note how the Torah says it. It doesn't say that I will dwell within the people, or I will dwell in the, even that I will dwell betocho in the sanctuary. Betocham, I will dwell in them, right? And what he says is that that's really about the Shekhinah, the divine presence needs to be present in our own hearts. That's what really the work is about and what the practice is about. So in my experience, you know, practice is a way of cultivating that sort of habit of heart, right? To borrow from Alexis de Tocqueville, habits of the heart that enable me to be present with whatever is in the moment. And that when I'm present in that way, that's actually when I sense a larger presence that's also here, that I'm part of and that's in me. So that's really, at the end of the day, I mean, spirituality is a lot about practice. It is not about something that is, you know, tremendously, it is no more and less complicated than the human heart. So, which is tremendously complicated and also pretty simple, right, at some points. So just takes a lot of constant practice.
Your teaching reminds me of what we often say to children, and we say to each other, that that divine image in which we were created, that's having that godliness, or whatever word we choose to use, within ourselves.
And I think that one of the tricks, I mean, it's interesting that you talk about camp, right? and the embodied experience, one of the ways that the Jewish community, you know, brought about the need for something like IJS was, I think, historically, that we have been so focused, especially in the 20th century, on the intellectual, on the academic. 85% of non-Orthodox Jews in America have gone to college for generations. And entering into that echelon of society meant that we dropped a lot of the, we wanted to become mainstream. We wanted to become, you know, Protestants, basically. And when you actually look at what's happened to a lot of Protestant, mainline Protestant Christianity, a lot of those same challenges are now, you know, besetting a lot of parts of the American Jewish community. People want, we need to not just be up in our heads, but to have the fullness of our bodies, of our hearts, of our spirits engaged. And that happens through music, that happens at camp. I'm talking to you from a summer camp right now where I have to be. And like, that's why so many people love camp, because we can be here in our full bodies, and that invites a larger form of spirituality and experience.
I feel like I'm pivoting sharply, but I'd like to hear about your journey toward working and now being the CEO of IJS.
Sure. On the one hand, for a lot of people I know, I think it was a bit of a surprise when I took this job. And for others, I think after a minute or two, they're like, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. I didn't come to IJS as like somebody who came out of spending a lot of time in mindfulness meditation centers or, you know, having a long experience with a lot of meditation practice. I've always been a musician, and davening Jewish prayer and music has always been a deep part of my experience. And I've always been somebody who's tried to live very, I would say, mindfully in the sense of ethically and with a lot of reflection on my own actions and values. But it was really in the months before I came to IJS professionally, I'd signed up with IJS as a student. And that came about because a couple of good friends of mine, the three of us, along with Rebecca Minkus Lieberman and Jane Shapiro, had been involved in founding an organization called OROTE in Chicago, OROTE Center for New Jewish Learning. And all of us had shared a similar sensibility. But Sam and Jordan, who were the two other guys, had then gone on to work at IJS. Sam Feinsmith, Rabbi Sam Feinsmith, had been in rabbinical school with me 20 years ago, has been a long old friend. And Sam and Jordan had both been working on me for years. You should come do IJS's rabbinic program. And at the time, I was working at the University of Chicago Divinity School. I was the dean of students there. And I realized I really could use this in my own life. My father had passed away about 6 months before, and I was kind of entering midlife and feeling that. And I was like, oh yeah, this is kind of the time. So I'd already committed to doing that. And then I got a call from a friend of mine, Aliza Klein, who's the CEO of One Table.
Yeah, Aliza Klein has been on this podcast.
She was on your show. That's right. And so Aliza said, you should really apply for this job at IJS. And Elise is one of those people that, you know, whatever she tells you to do, you should just do. And so, and one thing led to another, and I wound up getting the job. But for me, you know, my earlier career had been, I was a Hillel rabbi at Northwestern University for 6 years. And while there, I had realized that my rabbinic work was not only about helping Jews be more Jewish, but really, I realized there was a broader issue here of, we need to help the whole campus, right, and sort of broader society be a place where we're all asking questions of meaning, and we're supporting that work. And that led to creating an organization called Ask Big Questions. It was a project sort of incubated and launched within Hillel International that was devoted to bringing people together for conversations about questions we share as human beings and how to have meaningful conversations across lines of difference, because we share these questions just by virtue of having a body and living on the planet. And did that for 6 years before going to USC. And so I can see a through line there that I've always really been committed to and interested in questions that can bring us together, questions that help us explore our humanity and to live together and to create a level of trust and intimacy pretty quickly. And so then when I came to IJS, finding a place where I think, as many other people have experienced, it wasn't just about talking about the theory of that or, you know, creating some practice. It was really about what's the practice, both personal and on a group and a communal level. What are the practices that we can really engage to cultivate that, and talking about that wholeheartedly and unabashedly, and just finding a group of colleagues, many of whom are my teachers, who just have spent years really working on that and living it, and it's been an incredible privilege.
I want to point out something you mentioned when you started to talk about your journey toward working with IJS, that people mentioned they didn't see you as someone that fit that bill. And specifically because you weren't the type of person that was going on long silent retreats, and that you were just completely immersing yourself in these type of situations, but that you were finding spirituality in moments throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think mm-hmm. that's a huge lesson, that we can find spirituality in the mundane, and mm-hmm. that you don't have to be doing it at every hour to consider yourself a spiritual person.
Absolutely. I think it's really, really important. And I think that, you know, unfortunately, the image of, you know, you have to do it all or nothing, right, keeps a lot of people from doing anything. And there is tremendous value. I don't want to discount the value of retreat, and that when you encounter someone who's like spent their 10,000 hours, like you can see that, you can feel it. It's palpable. There's an energy and a presence about them. And yet, like, it's like exercise also. It's like when you go to the gym, well, I don't have, you know, an hour to do my workout, so I'm not going to do anything. No, right? I mean, it's better to do half an hour than an hour. It's better to do 10 minutes than nothing, right? I mean, so I think that the same thing here. I mean, these are spiritual muscles in the same way. They are practices, and they are like habits of the heart that have to be practiced. You know, I like to remind my kids that, you know, their favorite baseball player is Miguel Cabrera for the Detroit Tigers. You know, Cabrera's Hall of Famer, you know, going to be a player who hits 500 home runs and, God willing, 3,000 hits, the eighth player to do so. And Miguel Cabrera does batting practice every day at 37, 38 years old. You know, Yasha Heifetz practices violin every day. It's not like once you reach a level, you just stop, right? And you don't have to be Heifetz or Miguel Cabrera. You're you, and just practice being you. And so whatever you can do is good, and we can find it, you know, in every moment.
And the point you made about practicing being you is huge, because we can get into the everyday of our lives and our routine and our work and our obligations and completely lose ourselves in that. And I personally think the world overall would be such a better place if everyone took a little bit of time to reconnect with who they are personally. So I'm glad you said that, practice being you.
Yeah. And I think that's also, you know, one of the beauties, particularly of Judaism, of the Jewish tradition, is, you know, Shabbat is this built-in practice, right? Where we say, like, that's what you do once a week. And you can also have mini Shabbases, you know, at any point in the week in a certain sense, right? But that the practice of Shabbat is exactly about letting go of the need to be someplace else, the need to be separating everything and sorting everything and making order in the world. On the seventh day, we sit, you know, and we stop and we pause. And in that being present with ourselves, we make an ability for a presence, for a larger presence to also be present within us.
This is something I never heard before you said these words. Shabbat Vayinafash, and I'm going to ask you a Hebrew technical question. Vayinafash,
yeah,
is also in the same root as nefesh.
Yes, yes.
Never heard that before until I'm talking to you about it as it relates to spirituality, and I heard that root.
Well, and it's a notoriously difficult word to translate. It's, you know, that God was renewed, God rested, God was, I like to say, perhaps like re-ensouled. And what's interesting is that it's God, and that even God has to do that, right? So if God has to do that and has to stop calling things, this is Shemayim and this is ours, this is heaven and earth, right? That's 6 days of the week. But somehow on the seventh day, God says, God needs to stop. You know, all the more so for us, that pause and breathing and reconnecting with our own soul and spirit, right? That's the work.
Yes. So I'll never hear that pasuk, that phrase from Torah, the same again. And so beautiful. This is just a new, beautiful
Thank you.
Way of being able to look at Shabbat as a way of re-souling, as you said, coming back to your own nefesh, to your own soul. And the other thing I was thinking about in terms of Shabbat and in terms of practice is, no matter where you are in your practice of Shabbat, it's just that, it's a practice, and you can do any part of it or all of it. And anything that's towards connecting back to yourself is good, whether you are halachically observant or you're growing towards that, or maybe you're not growing towards that, but you're taking a nod towards coming back to yourself.
Yeah. Well, and you had asked about, in my own journey, I went to an Orthodox rabbinical school and I lead a halachic life, and halacha is very important to me. But I think one of the things that's evolved for me, and I think it's evolved in sort of popular conversation as well, is that halacha, we've unfortunately translated halacha as Jewish law. And a number of books recently have pointed out, like, that's really not an adequate translation, but it's not really law per se. That doesn't do it justice to what it is. I think a better term might be discipline, right? It's about, this is a discipline. Like, there's a colleague of mine, Ariel Mays, who has a wonderful essay about halacha basically is spiritual discipline, like karate, right? He opens his essay talking about when he was 16 and doing his black belt test in karate. And he then makes the linkage to learning the practice and discipline that it takes in that form, right, is very similar to, you don't achieve a black belt in halacha. That's not how that works. But that when we think about it, like, it's a form of practice, it's a form of discipline, and it's giving us ways of sort of living that out in our bodies and minds and spirits. And it's just something that we live into. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, whatever that it can be, what it really is there's ancient wisdom there that has been developed over generations. The danger is that it becomes, when we translate it as law, it becomes this sort of checkbox and checkboxes and hoops and limitations. And well, if I didn't do this and I didn't do it right, you're missing the forest for the trees at that point, I think. So yeah, it can be a wonderful sort of invitation. And so Shabbat or prayer or holidays or anything else, right, can just be this wonderful font of wisdom and practice for us.
I think we could possibly continue to have a conversation about spirituality and how it relates to Jewish life forever. But I really wanted to dive back into some of the other programs of IJS. You mentioned the clergy. I don't know what the title is of the program, but the clergy program that you have.
The clergy leadership program, yeah. I mean, one of the things that's really the pandemic, it turned out that we had something that was a growth industry in the pandemic. And for us, it was a real, like for everybody, it was a huge turning point. And, we pivoted, that's the term. And we started doing a free online half an hour daily Jewish mindfulness meditation practice. So every day at 12:30 Eastern and Monday to Friday. And we started that out, not really knowing what was going to happen. We had a weekly sit before, that maybe 30 people came to, and we thought that was great. We started on March 12, 2020, 41 people came, thought, wow, that's a lot of people. By a week later, we're up to about 300. And we've been humming along basically around that level. We've had as high as 758 when Rabbi Angela Buchdahl hosted one day last summer, sort of celebrity host. But, we've now developed this wonderful offering that thousands of people have been taking part in, and not just in the live practice, when it's live, but also then it's posted on YouTube and people watch it later. We started doing a live weekly Torah study online, sort of a contemplative Torah study that's oriented more towards questions of personal spirituality, reading the weekly Torah portion with an eye towards personal spirituality. We started a podcast that my colleague, Rabbi Jonathan Slater, started called Open My Heart on Jewish Prayer, and getting people, various wonderful rabbis and cantors and teachers, to come on and talk about their personal prayer practice, not just like, what do these words mean? Again, like, it's not talking about just the intellectual piece, but like, really, what's going on for you? And what do you try to make happen? And what are the practices that help you do that as you're interacting with Jewish prayer? We started a free online weekly Jewish yoga studio that Cantor Lizzie Shamash runs, and a couple hundred people come every Monday for that. So it's just been, we've opened up, a lot of things. And then we have a whole online learning platform with, an introductory course in Jewish mindfulness meditation called The Gift of Awareness, and another one in Tikkun Midot practice, which is cultivating character traits and virtues that really living your best life. Like, how do you want to, all of us want to show up with more a sense of loving connection, a sense of setting wise boundaries, a sense of balance, etc. And so Rabbi Mark Margolius created this course, and it takes people through that. We have a 6 units, soon to be 7, monthly as part of our prayer project series, where you can spend a month doing sort of an intensive on a different element of Jewish prayer. So all of these things have like opened up for us. Before the pandemic, we were very retreat focused. Really, really a retreat-based organization, and we're getting back to now some retreats. But really, this has opened up, through online learning. There's just a whole lot more that's available to people, and you can go to our website, jewishspirituality.org, and you can see everything that's there.
I have links to all of this in the show notes, so links to all your programming and a link to the podcast. And what's exciting is that there's a little bit of everything. So there should be something for anyone.
Yeah, I really hope so. Yeah.
So let's talk about that, because for me, speaking with people from the different organizations, it's all about Jewish engagement. And obviously these offerings create Jewish engagement. How do you see IJS reaching fuller engagement as you go forward?
Yeah, we're finishing up a new strategic plan, and that's going to hopefully get launched at the beginning of 2022. You know, for us, we've done really, really well with people who already identify as spiritual seekers. So if people are Googling Jewish spirituality, you'll find us. And that's great. But if you think of a bell curve, there's probably like, you know, 1-5% of the Jewish world that's going to like say, I'm looking for Jewish spirituality and I'm a spiritual seeker. There's then probably a next 20% on the bell curve that would really love to live more mindful, purposeful, intentional, wise, compassionate, loving lives. And they just need some help, you know, getting there. And they wouldn't necessarily identify as like, I'm a spiritual seeker. And so we really want to help reach those people. And I think to your point earlier, I think there's an opportunity cost. There's a liability if we don't do that, because people are looking for that. And if they don't find it in Judaism, they're going to find it someplace else. It might be a church. It might be on Peloton. It could be anywhere, right? But if they're not finding it in the Jewish world, they, you know, we could wind up losing them. And that's not a good thing, because there's not a whole lot of Jews to go around as it is right now. So our route to doing that is we're aiming to partner with organizations that work with young adults, that work with families with young children, that work with teens. We think there's a lot of possibility in all those areas. We're looking to expand the range of leaders that we work with beyond not only clergy, but also folks in other sorts of Jewish agencies and organizations, talking about like, you know, working at summer camps or working in schools or JCCs, social justice organizations. Those are all on our agenda and our menu. And then also building up the field of Jewish spirituality, like over the last two decades that IJS has been around, there's now just efflorescence of a lot of people who have learned to lead Jewish mindfulness meditation sits. They're doing it through their synagogues. They're doing it online through their local communities. And now, because of the pandemic, it's not only local. And you can go online at this point and find a Jewish mindfulness meditation sit many hours of the day from around the world. So we want to try to lift that up and build it more. And, you know, there are apps now of, you know, 10% happier, Headspace, Calm, right, that where you can get meditation. We want to get Jewish meditation into those places. We want to be putting our own resource out to the world. So a big, you know, media development and all that.
Interesting that you mentioned that, because I use Insight Timer. And yep. I've done searches on there that for Jewish content, and there is some. I'd love to see more, but there is some in there.
Yeah.
Very well done.
Yeah, you know, and that's great. And like, we can be bringing these folks together to develop stronger, a better understanding of what do we mean by Jewish spirituality? What do we mean by Jewish mindfulness meditation? What's effective? What really, what's happening for people? We can be doing research to try to understand that better. And so those things are all on our agenda for the coming years.
So what do you say to the person who has their curiosity piqued, but yet feels they don't have the Jewish knowledge or background? And I'll give a perfect example. Throughout our chat, you and I, we've thrown out a lot of terms that many people might not know. I'm very conscientious of that. So I put in the show notes definitions of anything that I can remember, or, and I go back and I worry through them to make sure that my audience has a resource to finding those things. And I also know that there are non-Jewish people that are listening, and of course, Jewish people that might not have the backgrounds that you and I have. So what do you do to quell the fears of someone that says, well, maybe I just don't know enough about being Jewish to be involved?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that, you know, we have historically really tried to be very mindful of, you just need to be a person who wants to enter into this, right, with an open heart, and not create high barriers to entry. Especially, you know, if you want, try out any of those free offerings that are out there and see if any of them, you know, work for you. And have an openness also to, we really try to teach. I mean, it's funny, we teach Torah, we're imbued with a value of compassion and non-judgmentalism. So nobody at IJS should be, we certainly don't try to, or we try not to make anybody feel bad for whatever they might not know. Like whatever, whoever you are is great. And you are who you are in the moment. And that's all any of us are. And so we try to, like, I think really be a welcoming organization in that way. And that we're trying to share something that we think is really beautiful and wonderful and can be really helpful and help people live more meaningful, more purposeful, more interconnected lives.
Yeah, it's great. It's so important these days for all of our Jewish organizations to have those low barriers of entry so that no matter where you are in your journey, you feel comfortable. I think that's important. And I think that even from what we've studied in the Pew report, people are saying that, you know, I just don't connect because I don't have the knowledge. And so I just walk away. And the message that you don't have to know anything in advance is an important one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's very consistent with, you know, our own teaching. It's, you know, it's not about what background knowledge you have. It's not about what you know. It's not about any of that. It's really about, are you a human being who's open to being in relationship with other human beings and exploring your own self and entering into a spiritual experience?
Tying back to how much you grew during the pandemic and what you just said about being really in relationship with yourself, but in relationship with other humans, that's what the pandemic brought out, is that need to be in relationship with others at a time when we couldn't go out and physically be there. It gave an opportunity for us to find new ways to be in relationship with ourselves and others. I'm just amazed by what you were able to create in the last 18 months. Really exciting.
Thank you. So am I.
I always ask everyone, because of course I'm all about what's going on in the Jewish community, what organizations are you excited about? You mentioned OROTS, which of course I know about because I'm here in Chicago and it's local. What other organizations do you think are just doing great work that you'd like to mention?
Oh, wow. I want to be careful not to leave anybody out.
it's hard.
I think, yeah. First of all, I just want to say, I think so many local organizations, we work with, with all of these rabbis and cantors in local communities who have just done miraculous work over the last 18 months and have worked tremendously hard to get there and have, transformed themselves in many instances. And so, I'm not going to pick any favorites, but I just think in general, just look at some of the work that, some of these local organizations have done. We've developed a wonderful partnership with the JCC Association, actually, where we've worked with their professionals as a professional development piece and sustaining themselves through our course called Awareness in Action, this Tikkun Midot course that I mentioned before, that we trained 25 of their professionals from around the country as facilitators in that course. And then they recruited 10 people from their own agencies and took them through the course. And the results of that were amazing, where they now want to scale that up with us and bring that kind of spiritual practice even more into their professional life. And hopefully, ultimately, it would be great to have Jewish yoga alongside yoga at the JCC, for instance, right? So I think that the JCC Association is doing really interesting and exciting work. And I'm excited about the partnership we have with them. We're doing something similar now. We're going to be launching something with Jewish Social Justice Roundtable for executive directors of social justice organizations, again, who have just worked their fannies off, for not only the pandemic, but the election and racial justice awakening and all sorts of, and are just tapped out and burnt out and themselves need some restorative spiritual practice for themselves, much less for the people they lead and work with. So I'm excited about, what's going on in that community. And I think there's just a number of great organizations that are doing great work in the same space that we're working in. We have partners in Israel, Or HaLev, is a wonderful Jewish mindfulness and meditation organization who we work with a lot. They run retreats in Israel and in America and the UK, and we're big fans of them. There's the Jewish Studio Project out of Berkeley, that Adina Allen, Rabbi Adina Allen.
They were also on our podcast too, and they're doing amazing.
So, really love the work that Adina and her team are doing, and we've partnered with them as well. There's great stuff just all over that seems to be really burgeoning. And I think that the pandemic, was horrible for everything and was also, in some ways, was just opened up all of these possibilities, that might not have existed before. And so I'm really excited to see what grows from those ashes. It's exciting to watch.
I agree. because I think that so much will come from this horrible tragedy, and we'll look back and realize how we became better people because of it.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. I think there's a lot, you know, as we're opening up, and I'm even sensing in myself, you know, I'm about to take my first airplane trip next week, and just feeling through what's kind of just what's unmindfully clicking back into, you know, old normal, and how do I want to mindfully do that, you know, and what are some things I want to do differently? I think that's a question that we all need to be asking.
Over the past 5 or 6 years, I realized that my life is so much better when I dwell every day on what I'm grateful for. One of the systems that I've created in this podcast, although it's not necessarily about that, I always like to ask the people that are chatting with what they're grateful for.
Well, I think today, I'm really grateful that it was actually 2 years ago this weekend that I really realized that I wanted to leave the job that I was in, and that started the process of ultimately coming to IJS. And I knew at that point that I really wanted, what was most important to me was to be able to work in a place with people who were doing good work, who didn't take themselves too seriously. And I'm really just extraordinarily grateful to have found not only colleagues, but also a board and volunteers and a larger community of people who just really embody and live their values. And that it really is an amazing blessing to be able to do that. And so I just feel grateful for the opportunity, for those people in my life, for the ability, you know, to be able to say a couple of years ago, all right, I'm going to leave a job and I don't know where I'm going yet, and, you know, be able to find it. That was really something. So that's one thing that I'm really feeling right now.
Amazing. Well, I'm so glad that you took this journey and you're here, and I've been able to meet and connect with you. And I hope and I look forward to having more conversations, because I'm very inspired myself by them.
Well, thank you again. And thanks for doing what you're doing and having me here.
You're so welcome. Is there anything else you'd like my audience to know about IJS or you or anything?
Just to reiterate, I think this is, if you don't consider yourself a spiritual person, if you don't consider yourself, I'm not a meditator, spirituality is woo-woo. I was you also not too long ago, you know, and I've got a PhD, and I was like, it wasn't my world. And now I think having entered it, I just want to say, like, there's just an open invitation, and it's not for everybody. I want to be clear, like, you know, it's not that everybody needs to engage in all in whatever, but I think that more of us being open to that. And if you've heard something here that speaks to you, to be open to that experience. And I'm coming out of this pandemic to say, you know what, this might be something I want to try. And if there is something here for you, we would be thrilled. And if not, that's totally fine. But I just want to offer everybody the blessing of being open and trying new things and getting in touch with our hearts and our neshamot, our souls.
And as we say, can you ratzon?
So may it be. Amen. That's right.
Thank you for tuning in to the Bridging Connections podcast. This podcast and Bridges 613 will succeed if its social media reach is wide. Please partner with us to promote this important work. You can follow us on Facebook at Bridges 613 and visit our website at www.bridges613.org. There you can read blogs, listen to past podcasts, and subscribe to our newsletter. Please share the podcast and our social media links with your community and enable others to benefit and learn about the groundbreaking innovation taking place in our beloved Jewish community. Your support is greatly appreciated.